breeze.
Buck Benny, a two-fisted, quick-triggered marksman who shoots from the hip and never misses.
Well, hello again. This is Buck Benny speaking. Welcome to another episode of the Jack Benny Show. But tonight, I have some changes to announce. This is not going to be just the Jack Benny Show from the 1951-1952 season. This is also going to be the Phil Harris Show from the 1951-1952 season, from the exact same night as the Jack Benny Show was aired. But also, now I'm adding a third show, which is going to be the Jack Benny Show from the 1941-1942 season. So we're jumping back 10 years to get that. What I've decided to do, or try to do, we'll see what the response is take and sort of condense my Jack Benny presentations to you. I've been trying for years to think about, okay, well, maybe I can stop broadcasting certain Jack Benny shows in order to bring you other shows. But every time I try to drop one, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense, or people ask, they say, oh, we really want to listen to the Jack Benny Show. So what I decided is a way to present them to you in a way that doesn't take me as much time and allows me more time to present some other shows as well, is to combine them on a night. So for the foreseeable future, or at least depending on what my response is, and of course for a response on this, you can email me at buckbennyotr@gmail.com. That's buckbennyotr@gmail.com. And I would love to hear what you think about this. My concept is, if I combine the 1952 Jack Benny shows with, of course, the Phil Harris shows like I've been doing from that same night, plus then the third show being the 1942 Jack Benny shows from 10 years earlier, gives you a chance to hear a neat combination of shows. And for those of you who commute, I think this would be really nice, because as I've been commuting here the last few weeks, I said my mom was in the hospital. It's 2017, by the way. And as I've been commuting to see my mom, it's about an hour plus to get there and an hour plus to get back. But what I find is I'm listening to a podcast, after 30 minutes is up and it stops playing, then I'm on the road, I'm on the freeway. Do I really want to look down to try and find a different show to play? It's kind of dangerous. And so I was thinking, boy, people with an hour-long commute that are listening to the show, it might be nice for them to have an hour to listen to, or an hour and a half to listen to, where it's they don't have to change channels or anything. They can just listen straight through. So there's lots of reasons I'm doing this. The other thing, of course, like I said, is so I can bring you some other shows. What I'd like to do, I miss bringing you Suspense and Escape, and I miss bringing you some Western Wednesday. I'd like to bring back with Gunsmoke and The Six Shooter. Some of the other great Westerns would be nice to bring you. So I'm just trying to free up some space on different nights to be able to bring you different shows. So we'll see how this goes. Anyway, I thought I'd announce it today and start doing it today, because tonight's episode of the Jack Benny Show focuses on a spoof of Suspense. And Suspense is a famous radio show that I brought to you in the past and I'd like to start bringing to you again. Suspense started just about 75 years ago. And Suspense came out in June of 1942 and had a long run, 20-year run, all the way up until the very end of the radio era. It ran all the way up until 1962. In September of 1962, it was taken off the air. So it was one of the very last handful of shows that were still left from old-time radio drama that was out there. And like I say, I'd like to present you some of these shows. This is a fun for Jack. It's a great spoof of Suspense, something that's just kind of neat for any kind of radio fan to listen to. because it's one of your favorite shows spoofing another one of your perhaps favorite shows or one of the best shows in radio. So I hope you're going to enjoy that. And after that, of course, like I said, we'll have the Phil Harris Alice Faye show, so keep listening. And that's a wonderful episode with Phil going to Pebble Beach and talking about Bob Hope and Bing Crosby and so forth, who would be there for a golf tournament. And then, of course, we'll end out with the 1942 Jack Benny show, which will have its own intro before it, but basically it's one of the first on-location shows that he does to support the troops. This is, of course, just a few weeks after Pearl Harbor that this episode would have originally been on. So I hope you're going to enjoy all of the shows we bring you tonight. As a special treat, the folks at Cobalt Club, there was a really nice upgrade to the suspense Jack Benny episode from 1952, so that'll sound better than it ever has. And there was a really nice upgrade for the 1942 episode I'm going to bring you from March Field. And so that Jack Benny episode will sound better than it ever has. That was quite a big upgrade on that one, because my copy was very, compressed, I guess would be the word. And so it's still, the new copy still has some issues with it, but the sound quality, it sounds like you're there listening to Jack. It's pretty cool. So I hope you're going to enjoy all three of these episodes, and without further ado, here they are. Enjoy.
The Jack Benny Program, presented by Lucky Strike.
Be happy, go lucky, be happy, get better taste. Be happy, go lucky, get better taste today.
Lucky's taste better. So mild, so smooth, so firm and fresh, with better taste in every puff. Yes, Lucky's taste better. For Lucky's fine, mild, good-tasting tobacco goes into the cigarette proved the best made of all five principal brands. Let me repeat that. Proved the best made of all five principal brands. That's not an empty claim. That's a fact, verified by leading laboratory consultants. For example, Foster D. Snell of New York City, who report,
in our opinion, the properties measured are all important factors affecting the taste of cigarette smoke. We conclude that Lucky Strike is the best made of the five major brands.
And don't forget, LSMFT, Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. Fine, mild, good-tasting tobacco. There's no substitute for fine tobacco. And don't let anybody tell you different.
So remember the facts. Enjoy fine, mild, good-tasting tobacco in the cigarette that tastes better, Lucky Strike.
When you buy cigarettes, remember, Lucky's taste better.
Be happy, go lucky, go lucky, strike today.
The Lucky Strike program starring Jack Benny with Mary Livingston, Phil Harris, Rochester, Dennis Day, the Sportsman Quartet, and yours truly, Don Wolf. Ladies and gentlemen, as you all know, in the Rose Bowl game on New Year's Day, Illinois scalped the Stanford Indians. So now we bring you a man who could use one of those scalps, Jack Benny!
Thank you. Hello again, this is Jack Benny talking, and Don, you can stop vibrating because that was the worst toupee joke I ever heard. Not only that, but it was in very bad taste.
Bad taste?
Yes, I don't mind for myself, but it so happens that the Stanford coach, Chuck Taylor, really wears a toupee.
Now, wait a minute, Jack. I talked to Chuck Taylor right before the game. He's 31 years old, and he definitely has his own hair.
That was before the game. But when Illinois scored their first touchdown, his hair started to go. By the end of the third period, it was piling up on the ground, and all through that fourth quarter, it just laid there and turned gray. But, Don, that was really some game, wasn't it?
It certainly was. And, Jack, I heard you were sitting right on the 50-yard line. How'd you get such a good seat?
Well, Don, it wasn't easy. You see, even though I've lived in California for the past 15 years, I was born in Waukegan. So in order to get tickets, I called Governor Stevenson of Illinois.
Oh, and he got you the tickets?
Well, no. You see, he couldn't do anything for me personally, so he called Governor Warren of California.
Well, it was nice of Governor Warren to give you the tickets.
Well, he couldn't do anything for me either, so he called Mr. McMillan, the city manager of Pasadena, who got in touch with Nancy Thorne, the queen of the Tournament of Roses.
Oh, the queen got you the tickets.
Tickets? Well, not exactly.
Well, then how'd you get in?
I was the third princess on her right. I not only saw the game, but tonight I've got a date with the Stanford Center. You know, the way he raved over my blue eyes, I didn't have the heart to tell him. Don, who were you rooting for at the game?
Well, Jack, I didn't want to show any partiality, so I got a seat on the Stanford side and a seat on the Illinois side.
Don, how could you possibly sit on both sides of the... Oh, of course. And, Don, weren't you disappointed when you weren't picked as the winning float?
I would have won, but I was sabotaged.
Oh, yes. Well, better luck next year, you know?
Hiya, Donzie.
Well, hello, Phil.
Hello, Phil. Don and I were just discussing the Rose Bowl game. Were you there?
No, not this year.
Well, you must have watched it on television.
I started to, Jackson, but I turned it off.
Phil, how could you turn it off? It was a wonderful game.
I know, but I just couldn't take it.
What do you mean?
Look, Jackson, it's New Year's Day. I'm laying there with my eyes bloodshot, an ice bag on my head, the room spinning, and some character keeps yelling, "Look sharp, feel sharp, be sharp."
Phil.
If I'd have had anything sharp, I'd have cut my throat.
All right, Phil. You've celebrated, you had your fun. Now it's time to work. The least you could have done is to see that all your boys showed up.
What are you talking about? The band's here.
Where's Remley, Sammy, and Bagby? Your hoodlum section is missing.
Hoodlum section? Now, hold it, Jackson. I don't think it's very nice the way you go on week after week insulting those three boys. They may not be college graduates, but they come from good families. They're sensitive, refined, and perfect gentlemen. And it's your fault that they're not here today.
My fault?
Yeah, if you'd have paid me more money, I could have bailed them out.
Phil, they're in jail? What for?
Cross the street in the middle of the block.
Now, wait a minute, Phil. They can give you a ticket. But they can't put you in jail for walking across the street.
On their hands and knees.
Oh, well. That's different. All right, Phil, I'll give you the money. Call up and get the boys out.
Okay, thanks. Hand me that phone.
Imagine crossing on their hands and knees. Hello?
Hello, is this the Lincoln Heights jail?
Well, Phil Harris, how are you?
Oh, fine, Captain, fine. Look, I called up about three of my boys. They're on the county again.
Which one?
The three with the tire marks on their backs.
Oh, those. I already released them.
Well, what about the bail?
I charged it to your account.
Oh, good, good, good. I thought I was overdrawn.
By the way, Phil. Hey, Phil, would you send someone down to pick up their belongings?
Their belongings?
Yeah, when we arrested them, one of them was carrying a piano.
I know it, I know it. One bottle opener and they gotta nail it to the signway. I'll see you later, Captain.
All right, so long, Phil.
Hey, it's all set, Jackson. They'll be back next week, and I just hope that you'll treat them a little nicer.
Oh, I will, Phil, I will. Who knows, maybe the... Oh, hello, Mary.
Hello, Jack.
Well, you're here. Now, where's Dennis?
I don't know. He hasn't come in yet.
Well, how can we go on with the show if the cast doesn't get here on time?
Oh, Jack, don't be mad at Dennis. I happen to know something that you don't know.
Well, don't tell me. Let me guess. It's about Dennis, huh? I know. He's running for president.
Besides that.
What?
Jack, this is something you won't believe.
All right, what is it?
Well, all of a sudden, Dennis got a big crush on me.
Dennis? has a crush on you?
Yeah. Ever since last week when I danced with him at Charlie Foy's nightclub, he's been sending me notes and little gifts.
Dennis has been sending you gifts? What did he give you?
Oh, a lot of things. Yeah. His Boy Scout knife, a bag of marbles.
No.
3 bottle caps, a ball of tinfoil, a fish hook, and a dead frog.
Mary, you mean Dennis gave you all those... Mary, what's that you're wearing on your leg?
His bicycle clip. We're engaged.
Well, isn't that cute? So Dennis thinks he's in love with you, huh?
Yes, and Jack, do me a favor, will you? When he comes in, don't kid him, because he's so serious about... Oh, shh, here he comes now.
Hello, Mr. Benny.
Oh, hello, Dennis.
Hello, Dennis.
Hello, Don.
Hi, kid.
Hello, Phil.
Hello, Dennis. Dennis, I said hello.
Mary, don't make it so obvious.
Obvious? All I said was hello.
I know, but look at how you're trembling.
Dennis, you're imagining things. She's not trembling.
What are you trying to do, break us up?
No, I'm not trying to break you up.
Say, Mary, come here a minute, will you? I want to look at you.
Well, all right, Dennis.
Gee, gosh.
Well, what is it, Dennis?
To think that you'll soon be my wife and Babe will be my brother-in-law.
That's nowheres on this page. I guess. It's better than what we had written there. I know that.
Now, look, Dennis, I don't want to break up your romance, but for 2 weeks now, I've been anxious to see Death of a Salesman. So do you mind if I ask your fiancée, Miss Livingston, to go with me tonight?
Hey, you're wasting your time, kid.
Oh, I am, eh? What about Mary? Would you like to see Death of a Salesman?
Oh, I'm sorry, Jack, but I already saw it.
With whom?
Dennis.
Oh.
I'll go with you, Mr. Benny.
But you saw it with Mary.
Who looked at the pictures?
Dennis, do me a favor. Will you go ahead and sing your song?
Oh, okay.
Charmaine, sung by Dennis Day. And very good, Dennis.
Thanks.
And now, ladies and gentlemen...
Oh, Mr. Benny, I want to congratulate you.
Congratulate me?
Yes, Radio and Television Daily took a poll and you were voted Radio's Man of the Year.
Well, thank you, Dennis.
Don't thank me. I voted for somebody else.
Oh, All right, now behave yourself. And now, ladies and gentlemen... For our feature attraction tonight, we're going to present a sketch based on one of radio's most popular dramatic shows, Suspense. Now, in this sketch, I will play the part of... Oh, darn it. Hello?
Hello, Mr. Berry, this is Rochester.
Rochester, I was just starting my sketch. What do you want?
I thought you might like to know. A friend of yours from Waukegan just phoned from the Union Station.
A friend of mine?
His name is Cliff Gordon.
Cliff Gordon? Why, Rochester, he's one of my best friends. We grew up together.
He said you and he were born in the same hospital on the very same day.
That's right, Rochester. How did he sound?
Well...
Well, what?
Either you're over 39 or we had a very bad connection.
Never mind. Anyway, that's Cliff for you. The minute he gets in, he calls me. I hope you told him he can stay in the guest room.
Yeah, but he said he was going to the Biltmore.
But, Rochester, we have the extra room. Why doesn't he stay with us?
I guess it was my fault, boss.
What do you mean, your fault?
At first, I didn't know he was your friend, and I quoted him tourist rates.
Oh, yes. Mike DeSalle set them for us. Well, Rochester, when did Mr. Gordon say he was coming over to visit me?
Tonight, about 8 o'clock.
Oh, darn it, and I wanted to see Death of a Salesman. Oh, well, I can see it some other time. Goodbye, Rochester.
Goodbye. Oh, say, boss.
Now what?
They just brought back your Maxwell.
Good, but why did it take so long?
Well, it took 4 days to take off the roses and 2 days to drive it back from Pasadena.
All that trouble and no prizes. Well, so long, Rochester.
Goodbye.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, as I started to say, for our feature attraction tonight, we're going to present our version of one of radio's most popular shows, Suspense. Set the scene, Don.
Ladies and gentlemen, tonight we will usher in the 1952 season by presenting a sketch fraught with drama and excitement, and well calculated to keep you in suspense.
My name is Aristotle Fink. It's an ordinary name. And I'm an ordinary guy. Until last week, I was a teller at the California Bank in Glendale. But now, I'm a teller at the California Bank in Beverly Hills. No, I wasn't promoted. The rain just changed our location. I live in a small cottage with my wife, Mary, and our 21 children. The reason I have 21 children is because at one time I hated my wife and wanted to lose her in the crowd. But since then, we were serenely happy until that fateful day that changed my humdrum life into a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense. That eventful morning started like any other. I had just finished my breakfast and turned to my wife and said,
"It was a wonderful breakfast, dear, but I must leave you now and go to work."
"I'll be waiting for you, darling."
"I can't wait to return. I'll be counting the hours."
"I'll be counting the children."
"Good, good. That reminds me, you better wake Philip up. I don't want him to be late for school."
"Oh, here he is now. Good morning, Philip."
"Good morning, Mother."
"Good morning, Dad."
Something always happened to me when he called me Dad. But I take a little bicarbonate and feel better. I had a few minutes before going to work, so I decided to have a fatherly talk with Philip.
"Philip, have you given any thought to the future?"
"Yes, I have, Dad."
"Good. What do you want to do when you grow up?"
"I want to lead an orchestra."
"Oh, so you want to be a musician?"
"No, I just want to lead an orchestra."
"But, Philip, leading an orchestra would be a waste of your talents. You are a great student. You are an educated fellow. You are a Phi Beta Kappa."
"I are?"
"That's right, son, you am." And you're destined for greater things than...
Here's your school books and your lunch, Philip.
Thank you, Mother. Did you prepare something nice for lunch?
Yes, 2 chicken sandwiches, an apple, a banana, and your thermos bottle is filled with milk.
Milk?
Yes, milk. This is a sketch. Now hurry or you'll be late for school.
Goodbye, Mother. Goodbye, Dad. And I do mean Dad.
All of my children left for school. It was such a beautiful day that I decided to walk to the bank. In fact, as I walked along with the sun shining in my face, my heart was so filled with joy, I started to sing.
I wish I was a swinging, clinging vine. I wish I was a swinging, clinging vine. If I was a swinging, clinging vine, I'd only cling to that gal of mine. I wish I was a swinging, clinging vine.
Hi-ho, fiddly-dee, tell you what I'd like to be. Hi-ho, fiddly-dee, here is what I dream I'd like to be.
I wish I was a good old lucky strike. I wish I was a good old lucky strike. If I's a good old lucky strike, I'd be the cigarette you like. I wish I was a good old lucky strike.
Hi-ho, fiddly-dee, tell you what I'd like to be. Hi-ho, fiddly-dee, a lucky strike is what I'd like to be.
I wish I was an LSMFT. I wish I was an LSMFT. If I's an LSMFT, I'd be so very proud of me. I wish I was lifty.
Hi-ho, fiddly-dee, tell you what I'd like to be. Hi-ho, fiddly-dee, an LSMFT I'd like to be.
I wish I had a match somewhere on me. I wish I had a match somewhere on me. 'Cause if I's an LSMFT, I'd take that match and light up me. I wish I had a better voice on me.
Hi-ho, fiddly-dee, if I was an LSMFT, hi-ho, fiddly-dee, everyone could take a puff on me.
I wish I had 100 million friends. I wish I had 100 million friends. If I had 100 million friends, I'd show them I had no loose ends. I wish I had 100 million friends.
Hi-ho, fiddly-dee, tell you what I'd like to be. Hi-ho, fiddly-dee, an LSMFT I'd like to be. Like to be, like to be, like to be, like to be.
I arrived at the bank, and this day was like all the others, with one exception. A man came to my window. A man who was destined to change my life story from a peaceful one to a tale well calculated to keep you in...
I didn't say it yet!
To keep you in suspense.
Watch it, fellas.
This man came up to my window and thrust a bill at me. It was a genuine $10,000 bill. I looked at him for a moment, then looked back at his $10,000 bill when he said...
I'd like to change this.
But this is a $10,000 bill.
I know, it's the smallest I got.
Okay, I'll change it. Would you like the change in $1,000 bills, hundreds, fifties, twenties, tens, or fives?
I want it in pennies.
You want $10,000 in pennies? Why?
I got 500 piggy banks for Christmas.
I complied with his request. Also sorry that I gave him that joke. I gave him $10,000 worth of pennies, which he put in his pockets. And my eyes followed him as he walked out, leaving his pants behind. I then stared at the bill and realized that I, Aristotle Fink, held this treasure in my hand. Suddenly, a harmless thought struck me. My family had never seen a $10,000 bill, and it wouldn't hurt anyone if I took it home and showed it to them. As I entered my house, my wife was standing in the hall.
Hello, darling.
Oh, quick, come in. Shut the door.
All right, darling. Now, I want to show...
Don't talk. Help me close the windows.
They're closed now. Darling.
Wait. Help me open the air wick.
Air wick? What's the matter?
The shrimp boats are coming.
That's not important now. Darling, I have a surprise for you.
For me too, Dad?
Yes, for you too, Philip.
Oh, for heaven's sake, Philip. Must you always go around with your pants dragging?
I can't help it, Mother. I don't have a belt or anything to keep them up with.
Why, Philip, to hear you talk, a person would think I don't make enough money to keep you in suspenders. I said suspenders! Stupid hoodlums! Section?
What's the surprise, dear?
Something I want you all to see. Philip is here. Call the rest of the children.
Okay. Sam, Peggy, Hilda, Milton, George, Ada Marie, Ellen, John, Hiller, Jeanette, Bonnie, Jean, Stephen, Terry, Harriet, Albert, Julius, Crenshaw, Pico, and Sepulveda.
All of our children got along well, except Pico and Sepulveda. They kept crossing each other. Suddenly the door opened, and the children ran in. When I was a young man, I never dreamed that I, Aristotle Fink, would ever have so many children.
The children all here, darling. Now tell them about your surprise.
Okay. Now listen, you little Finks. I want to show you this. It's a $10,000 bill. Here, take it. Philip, why aren't you looking at the $10,000 bill?
That don't mean nothing to me. I've seen them before.
You have?
Yeah, there's a little blonde in my class named Alice who's loaded with them.
All right, children, give me back the bill. Children. Children!
Somewhere on the tour, through the hands of my children, the $10,000 bill disappeared. I looked for the money all that night, but couldn't find it. And the following morning, when I went to work, the president of the bank sent for me. I walked into the office of this very rich man. He was sitting at his desk playing tiddlywinks with silver tiddlies. I looked at him timidly and said...
You sent for me, sir?
Yes. Do you know that $10,000 is missing from your accounts?
Yes, sir.
Did you take it?
Yes, sir.
Do you think that was nice?
No, sir.
Well, watch it next time.
But I didn't steal it, sir. I only took it home to show it to my wife and kids.
I know you didn't mean to steal it, but it's out of my hands now. There's a police inspector outside. Miss Jones, send the inspector in.
Suddenly, the door opened, and the policeman walked in carrying a pair of handcuffs. He walked over to us and said...
Okay, put these on, fatso.
Not me. He's the guilty one.
Oh, are you a Fink?
Yes.
What's your name?
You just said it, a Fink.
Well, what do you think, Fink? You're going to the clink.
Oh, no, I'm not. Come one step nearer, and I'll stab you.
Look out, look out, he's got a knife.
Don't be a fool. Put down that knife.
Oh, yeah? Take that.
Oh. Get away from me. Don't come near me with that knife. I haven't done anything.
Oh, yes, you have. And I'm going to stab you, too. Take that.
I didn't shoot them, folks. I stabbed them. But the sound man is still sore at me on account of the lousy Christmas present I gave. And that is my story. Now I'm in my cell in the state prison awaiting my execution tomorrow night. But in the cell next to me is a traveling man named Frederick who was convicted of killing his wife by hitting her over the head with his sample case. In a few hours, Frederick walks his last mile through the electric chair. Oh, it's small consolation. But before I go, I'll finally get to see Frederick March in Death of a Salesman. A picture well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Jack, we'll be back in just a moment, but first...
be happy, go lucky, get better taste today.
Lucky's taste better. Friends, LSMFT, Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. Fine, mild, good-tasting tobacco. There's no substitute for fine tobacco, and don't let anybody tell you different. Yes, Lucky's taste better. For Lucky's fine, mild, good-tasting tobacco goes into the cigarette proved the best made of all five principal brands. Let me repeat that. Proved the best made of all five principal brands. That's not an empty claim. That's a fact. Verified by leading laboratory consultants. For example, Froling and Robertson of Richmond, Virginia, who report,
it is our conclusion that Lucky Strike is the best made of these five major brands.
Friends, to get the facts that you as a smoker will want to know about cigarette quality, to learn the plain, simple truth about the important factors that affect the taste of a cigarette, send for your free copy of a new booklet, What Makes Lucky Strike Taste Better? Just drop a card to Lucky Strike, Post Office Box 99, New York 46, New York. That's Lucky Strike, Post Office Box 99, New York 46, New York.
Be happy, go lucky, go lucky strike today.
Good night, folks.
This is the CBS Radio Network.
RCA Victor, world leader in radio, first in recorded music, and first in television, presents the Phil Harris Alice Faye Show. For your enjoyment, here is the Phil Harris Alice Faye Show, written by Ray Singer and Dick Chevrolet, with Elliot Lewis, Walter Tetley, Robert North, Janine Roos, Han Whitfield, Walter Scharf and his music, and yours truly, Bill Foreman. This week, Bing Crosby is holding his annual National Pro-Amateur Golf Tournament at Pebble Beach, California. Phil has been invited and looks on it as a great chance to get away with the boys. But the best-laid plans of mice and husbands often go astray. More about that later. But first, a word from RCA Victor. Clearer, brighter, steadier. Those are words that describe the great television reception you get with RCA Victor supersets. A superset like the Preston, for example. And, of course, the quality of reception you get in your home is the most important thing to consider when buying any television set. That's the reason you'll be sold on the Preston the moment you see the clearer, brighter, steadier pictures on this 17-inch set. The Preston gives you television with picture power, which means you get the best reception possible, even in difficult television areas, city or country. And more than that, this table model is a beauty, with a matching consolette base available at modest extra cost. And when you buy the Preston, ask about a factory service contract. For when you buy RCA Victor television with RCA factory service, you get television's greatest combination. And now the stars of the RCA Victor program, Alice Faye and Phil Harris. Late tonight, Phil is leaving for Pebble Beach to defend the title he won last year in the Bing Crosby National Pro-Amateur Golf Tournament. Frankie is going with him, and right now they're discussing the good time they expect to have.
Hey, Curly, I can't wait to get to Pebble Beach. Oh, what a time we'll have. Yeah, we'll... You sure Alice isn't going along?
No. Poor kid, she can't make it.
What a pity.
It's a crying shame.
Yeah.
Oh, well, if she can't go, we'll just have to make the best of it.
That's the only way we can make the best of it.
Hey, Remley, listen to me. Man, are you going to love this trip. You see, we're staying at the Del Monte Lodge, and you're going to see some very important people. I'm talking about guys like Bing Crosby, Dutch Harrison, Bob Hope, Governor Warren, and Sam Manischewitz, and Byron...
Who's Sam Manischewitz?
He's the most important one. He's the wine steward.
Oh, of course. Old Sauterne Sammy.
Yeah.
Hey, Curly, we're really going to have a brawl.
Wait a minute. Now, don't get carried away with yourself, Remley. You see, I'm going up to play golf.
What's the matter, Curly? Alice just sneak into the room?
No, she's not here.
Then what's with this golf routine?
It ain't no routine. I'm the defending champ, and I'm going to try to win again. Of course, I'll just be playing during the day. But at night, we can... We'll have a few late poker games, and then we might sneak off to a speakeasy or two.
A speakeasy? Curly, when was the last time Alice let you out? They call them nightclubs now.
Oh, all right, then we'll go to a nightclub then. Hey, Remy, I hear they have some jazzy ones in Carmel.
Yeah.
They tell me that there's one place there that they got a great floor show. They say they got a line of them beautiful chorus gals, and they got 12 redheads who come in scandy costumes. And then, as the flamingos wing their way over the coral... They're silhouetted against the azure sky. Francis, you're just gonna love the Monterey Peninsula.
I'm sure I will. You know how I adore scenic splendor.
All right, fellas, you can break it up now. What are you talking about?
Oh, the flamingos at Carmel.
What flamingos?
The ones in the scanty costume. They do 2 shows a night.
Remley.
And there's 12 of them, and they're all redheads.
Remley. Pay no attention to Frankie. Honey, you know that I'm just going up there to play golf, don't you?
Of course I do. I never worry about you when you're away from me. I trust you implicitly. And I hope when you get to Pebble Beach, the 3 of you have a good time.
Well, thank you, dear. What 3? The only ones that are going are me and Frankie.
And my brother Willie. Oh, bless that little bloodhound.
Alice, you can't do that to me. I ain't gonna let you sick that brother of yours on me. I'd rather have you come along.
Yeah, Alice, Willie's even more of a wet blanket than you are.
That's why I'm sending him along. You'll need a wet blanket to dampen any fires that might get started within your raging little breasts.
Alice, I ain't taking them.
Then you ain't going.
I'd rather stay home. Guy's such a square.
Oh, he is not. Willie is a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah? He's as much fun as a gallstone operation.
Going with you anyway. He came over a few minutes ago and brought his bags with him.
And oh,
Phil,
Alice.
Phil, you just don't understand Willie. He's one of the boys, and you can have a good time with him. He's a real he-man.
Oh, sis.
Yes, Willie.
Have you seen my butterfly net?
That does it. Willie, if you're going with us, you ain't taking no butterfly net.
I am, too.
You are not.
Let him take it, Curly. Maybe we can use it to catch one of them flamingos.
Philip, if we're going away together, let's not start off by quibbling. If we maintain a spirit of camaraderie, well, we can have oodles of sport and gobs of fun.
Oh, well, in that case, let's get going. Higgly piggly.
Well, I'm going to enjoy this trip with the Bobbsey twins.
Well, I don't care.
Phil, there's no reason why the 3 of you can't have a good time together.
What kind of a good time? Guy's taking a butterfly net with him.
I'm only going to use the butterfly net during the day while you're playing golf. But at night, we'll really live.
Yeah? What are we going to do?
We'll mount the butterflies I catch during the day. Do you know how to mount a butterfly?
Well, I usually ride them side saddle. Look, Willie. They have a few nice bars in Carmel. We might go over one night and have a few snorts.
Now, Philip, you know very well I don't imbibe. And on this trip, I don't want you to either. I want you to win the tournament like you did last year. Oh, Mother, Mother was really proud that you were her son-in-law.
She was?
Yes. She said, I'm glad to see the big dope is good for something.
I don't think that was very nice for your old lady to say that about me. I mean, especially since I was good enough to take her daughter off her hands without a dowry.
I paid your family a dowry.
Curly, your family demanded a dowry?
Tribal custom. How much did you have to give Dad to get me, Alice?
$24, a string of beads, and 2 bottles of rum. Gee, and to think I could have gotten Manhattan Island and Grover Whalen for the same price.
Curly, I don't want to stand here and listen to any family arguments. When are we going to get started for Pebble Beach?
Your train doesn't leave until tonight. And now remember, Phil, when you get there, I don't want you and Frankie to get into any trouble.
No, they won't get into any trouble, sis. I'll be there to see they toe the mark. And now, if you'll excuse me, I have a few more things to pack. Wonder if I should take my bird call manual. There are flamingos up there. I might be able to entice one.
There's one of the neatest embalming jobs I've ever seen. Alice, we're not going to take him.
Oh, yes, you are.
But, honey, I don't...
Don't argue, don't argue. He's going, and that's all there is to it.
Why don't you belt her one, Curly?
Frank. Alice, I don't want to belt... to argue with you.
See, then let's not argue. We shouldn't part angry with each other. Why don't you do what we always do when we have an argument, Phil? Why don't you sing our song?
I don't want to.
Well, why not?
I'm not in the mood to sing Columbia, the Gem of the Ocean. I don't feel like singing at all.
Well, I do.
Down yonder, someone beckons to me. Down yonder, someone reckons on me. I seem to see a race in memory. Between the Natchez and the Robert E. Lee. Swanee Shore, I miss you more and more. Every day, my sunny land, you're simply grand. Down yonder, when the folks get the news, don't wonder at the hullabaloo. There's Daddy and Mammy, there's Ephraim and Sammy, waiting down yonder for me.
That's the case, Mammy Banks, we taste them now. There's lots of kissing and how. Down yonder someone beckons to me. Down yonder someone reckons on me.
I seem to see a race in memory. Between the Natchez and the Robert E. Lee.
Swanee Shore, I miss you more and more. Every day, my sunny land, you're simply grand. Down, down yonder when the folks get the news. Don't wonder at the hullabaloos.
There's Daddy and Mammy, there's Johnny and Granny, there's Liza and Willie, there's Sally and Millie. Waiting down yonder for, waiting down yonder for, waiting down yonder for me.
There, I know that you feel better, dear. Now let's kiss and make up, darling.
I don't wanna.
Frankie, I'm not talking to you. Phil, you're not mad at me,
no,
are
no,
you?
No, I'm not mad at you. I just don't want to take your brother.
Oh, you're just saying that. I know you like having Willie around. Now, if you'll excuse me, I have something to do. I have to go and watch Kukla, Fran, and Ollie. See you later.
Curly, I thought you only had 2 kids. Where'd Ollie come from?
William. That's a television show.
Oh.
Television. It's a great program, too. Especially if you watch it on an RCA Victor set. You ought to see those clear, brighter, steadier pictures.
Is the picture really clear?
Clear? Remley, you won't believe this, but we got an RCA superset on our front porch, and we get fan mail from Catalina.
You're right. I don't believe it.
Curly, Pebble Beach.
Oh, yeah. Now, look, Remley. Hmm? If we're going to have a good time at Pebble Beach, we got to figure some way to keep Willie from going with us.
It shouldn't be hard for us to figure out. If something happened to him, he couldn't go.
Exactly. But it's got to be something simple and harmless.
No, naturally. Curly?
What?
Alice wouldn't expect us to take him along if he was dead, would she?
She might. Once she makes up her mind, she can't change it. Remley, we can't kill him.
Why not?
We could get caught and be arrested.
Oh, yeah. No, we don't want to get arrested. Curly, you're an unconscious genius.
What do you mean?
Let's frame Willie and get him arrested.
Yeah. I like the picture. Got any good frames for it?
I have a few I haven't used yet. How about the drunken driving rap?
Ooh, that's a peachy one. How long would he get for that?
About 30 days. How's that sound?
Nice enough, but not long enough. Couldn't we add a few touches that would stretch the, stretch a little?
Oh, yeah. We can also frame a phony accident.
Yeah. How's that one work?
We hire somebody to pretend Willie ran him down and broke a leg.
I suppose you know a guy with a broken leg.
No. But I know a double-jointed old lady with a trick knee. For $10, her knee will buckle on cue.
Remley.
For $20, she'll give you a broken collarbone
job.
Yeah,
look, Remley.
And for $50, she has a brain concussion special that the Mayo brothers can't tell from the real thing.
Talented old wreck, ain't she? Look, Remley, will you please stop? I ain't gonna hire no old lady to stage a phony accident. Sounds sort of disrespectful. We get somebody else and then we... Uh-oh. The gag ain't no good.
Hmm?
Well, Willie don't drink, so how can we get
Curly,
him arrested?
Curly, you don't have to drink. The whole thing is a frame. I'll explain. We ask Willie to take us for a drive. Then our hired stooge jumps in front of the car, makes believe he's hit. Then in the excitement, Willie passes out. We pour a bottle of whiskey over his head.
We gotta waste a whole bottle?
Use cheap stuff.
Oh.
All we gotta do now is get a fake victim.
Like who?
Like you.
Go away from me. Your idea? Why don't you do it?
It's been nice knowing you, Curly. See you around sometime.
Well, you said yourself ain't nobody gonna get hurt. I'll show you how to do it. You see this T-wagon?
Yeah.
All right. Now, let's make believe that this T-wagon is Willie's car, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now then, he drives past you.
Yeah.
You make believe that you're hit, and you fall down on your hands and knees. Go ahead, get out.
All right. How's this?
No, that don't look real. Stay where you are, I'll show you. You see, you get down on your hands and knees this way, and then you...
Anybody home or bring the groceries? And... Well, if it ain't the AA track team.
Get up, Remley. I found a better victim.
You mean Julius?
Yeah. He looks like he's already been hit by an automobile.
To me, he looks more like he's been caught between two trolley cars.
Well, I couldn't help.
Fellas, I don't want to be inquisitive, but what are you doing down on the floor?
Nothing. We're just lying here under this tea table.
How do you like that? Even when they drink tea, they end up under the table. Must be force of habit.
Never mind. Hey, kid. Hey, listen to me, kid. How'd you like to make $10?
What do I have to do?
All you gotta do is lie down, let us run over you with a car.
Oh, the woodpeckers have been at him again. You guys expect me to risk my life for $10?
I see your point, kid. I'll make it $11.
I wouldn't do it for $11.50. I realize this is none of my business, but why do you want to run me over?
Ha 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 ha! so Frankie and me can go up to Pebble Beach and play golf.
That sounds like a good cause to die for.
Julius, nobody's going to die. This is just going to be a phony accident. We're framing Willie to get him arrested.
Do you guys lie awake nights thinking of this stuff? How is a phony accident going to get Willie arrested?
All right, listen, and I'll explain. Now, Mr. Remley and me will get Willie to drive us out to a lonely spot. You'll be waiting there behind a tree. When the car goes by, you yell, throw yourself on the ground, and make believe you're hit. Then I'll pour a bottle of whiskey over Willie's head, call the cops, and when they get there, what do they find?
Mr. Remley licking Willie's face. Look, I don't want no part of this, so goodbye.
So that's why you want to stage this thing, Remley. What a sneaky way to get a drink. You know, I've been thinking, you can't mess around with car accidents. Somebody's liable to get hurt. There must be a more subtle way to get Willie in the clink.
Yeah,
you
but I can't think of anything. Curly, I got it. I know just the guy who can help you. You know this guy, too. He has the lowest, most conniving mind of any human being. Do you know whom I'm referring to?
Yeah. But you just said you couldn't think of anything.
Oh, no. Now, this guy's even lower than I am. I'll give you a hint. His name is Rodney J. Grogan.
Old Grogan. That's our boy. Uh-huh. Come on, Remley. Let's go see.
Right.
Remley, what's the matter with you? Are you nuts? How do you expect to find Grogan around here? This block has nothing but exclusive shops.
Oh, I forgot to tell you. Grogan is now in a legitimate business.
Huh?
Oh, here's his place. Yeah, look at his sign.
Yeah. R.J. Grogan, furrier.
Hmm?
Ladies, why freeze? During the cold weather, wear one of our hot furs. Oh, sounds nice and legitimate.
Oh, yeah. Come on, let's go on in.
Hey, get a load of this joint. Pretty swanky, huh?
Yeah, it is. Grogan carries nothing but expensive merchandise.
You said that right. Hey, look at this beautiful fur cape. I love to stroke this soft.
Don't finger the mink, Fink.
I'm sorry, Grogan.
Oh, it's you, Harris. You like that cape, huh?
Yeah. Hey, is that good fur?
Is that good, he asks. This is a genuine blue mink.
Well, then why can't I stroke it?
The ink will come off on your fingers.
You dye them with ink?
Well, I used to use blueberry jam, but that was too messy. Customers got stuck to the coats.
Logan. I'm disappointed in you. I told Curly you handled good merchandise.
I do.
Yeah.
All the expensive coats down on that rack over there.
Hey, yeah, there they are over there. Oh, man, are they beauties. Woo-hoo. Where do you get these coats?
Around town. Do my biggest business with the movie colony.
Well, no wonder. The biggest movie stars would be proud to own coats like these.
They certainly were. Hey, my pride and joy is this full-length wild mink right here. Now, ain't that luscious looking?
Huh? Oh, Grogan, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
Isn't that a lovely... Hey, Remley,
hmm?
You know something? This looks like Alice's coat.
That's possible. Your house was on my November schedule.
All right. Grogan, you ought to be ashamed of yourself, handling stolen goods. That's against the law, and you're nothing but a criminal.
All right, never mind the lecture. What'd you come over here to see me about?
I want you to kidnap my brother-in-law.
Sorry, Harris, I don't handle hot relatives.
No, it's not a real abduction, it's just a gag.
Yeah, see, all we want you to do is to grab Willie and then hide him out, Grog, for a few days and until we tell you to let him go.
Oh, I see. Well, all right. If it's just a gag, okay. But how about this Willie character? Think he'll put up a fight?
Willie? He couldn't fight his way out of a bubble bath. You ain't got no trouble with him. Now, here's what we want you to do, Grog. You go over to the house right now and grab Willie. Then we'll come home in about an hour, but too late to do anything about it.
Yeah, okay.
Hey, Grogan, we certainly appreciate you doing this for us, don't we, Remley?
You bet.
Hey, we'll see you when we get back from Pebble Beach. Thanks,
yeah,
Grog.
Yeah, all right. Well, better get over to Harris' house and make the snatch. Hey, just remember, can't make that snatch right now. My mother's having the ladies' auxiliary over the house for a bridge game, and I promised to mark the cards for her. Well, I can grab Willie a little later.
Oh, Wallace, I'm so disappointed. I was all set to go to Pebble Beach, and now my boss calls me and tells me I have to work.
Oh, what a shame, Willie.
I hate to disappoint Philip and Francis. I know they've been looking forward to my going with them.
Yes, I know. They'll be brokenhearted about this, but I'll get it.
Hi, Alice.
Hi.
What's new?
Yeah, anybody missing? I mean, did you miss us?
Oh, Phil, I have terrible news about Willie.
Oh, what a shame. What time was he kidnapped?
Don't cry, Alice. We all have to be abducted sometime.
What are you talking about? I'm trying to tell you.
Hello,
that...
fellows. Did Alice tell you the bad news?
Yeah, but don't worry about it, Willie. We'll get you back. I'll notify the police as soon as I get back from Pebble Beach and then... Wait a minute. Are you still here?
Well, of course I am.
Well, you're not supposed to be.
Now, what's all this talk about kidnapping?
Well, haven't you heard there's a kidnapper loose in the neighborhood? He's grabbing people right and left, and it's only a question of time before he gets to our house and then...
Oh, nobody move. I got you covered.
See what I mean? A little late, but he made it.
Mr. Grogan, it's nice having you. Now, put that silly gun away and sit down. I'll make you a cup of tea.
Well, thanks. I'll take lemon in mine and... No, no! No, this ain't a social call. I'm here on business. I'm kidnapping your brother. Come on, Willie. You are coming with me.
Let go of me, you bully.
Get your hands off my baby brother. Phil, he's kidnapping Willie. Stop him.
Oh, I'd just love to stop him, honey, but he has a pistol.
I'll get the gun away from him. Give me that gun.
I don't want it.
And I'll make you let go of it. Take that. And that.
Hey, lady, stop butting me in the stomach with your head.
You're not a gentleman. Take that.
Lady, please, I got ulcers. Harris, call this blonde goat off of me.
Sorry, Grogan. I can't help you.
When you hired me to snatch Willie, you didn't tell me your sister was a battering ram.
Oh, so you two hired Grogan, just now, as I thought.
Honey, now, we didn't want Willie to go. It was just a gag.
Well, he can't go anywhere.
I know, but he can't?
Hey, Remley, we're on the loose.
No, you're not. I'm going with you. Any objections, fellas?
Yeah, we're not taking any women along, and you...
Now you did it, Alice. You loosened my little liver.
You want me to come, don't you, Wonga?
Well, I don't think that you ought to come. Now, Alice, it ain't going to do you any good to lower your head at me, remember?
I'll show you. Take that! Oh! Oh, my head.
I warned you, Alice.
Curly. Curly, I don't get this. Alice butts you in the stomach and she gets hurt. How come?
I've been through this before.
So?
So for the last 6 months, I've been wearing a Ford hubcap under my shirt.
Alice and Phil will be back in just a moment. They were made for each other. RCA Victor's 45 instruments and RCA Victor's handy 7-inch records were the first ever designed for each other. It's a completely new system of recorded music, the result of not just months, but years of scientific tests. That's why the 45 system sounds better, plays easier, and costs less than any other system of recorded music. You can choose any one of several RCA Victor 45 instruments. They range from the low-cost, automatic record changer attachment to luxurious 45 console models. You'll find complete phonographs, like the Victrola 45 table phonograph, for example, or the Victrola 45 personal phonograph. In any event, you'll find the one you want, the automatic 45 record player of your choice to fit your budget. And whichever one you choose, you'll enjoy the world's finest system of recorded music. Brought to you by RCA Victor, cornerstone of home entertainment for three generations.
This is Phil. We're a little late, so thanks and good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody.
This program is produced and directed by Paul Phillips. Remember, whether you're buying a television set, a radio, a Victrola phonograph, or records, put your faith in the cornerstone of American home entertainment for three generations. RCA Victor, world leader in radio and first in television.
Next, Theater Guild on the Air stars the Lunts on NBC.
Hello again. This is Buck Benny speaking. Welcome to another episode of the Jack Benny Show from the 1941-42 season. This is almost exactly 1 month after the attacking of Pearl Harbor. And tonight we get to hear and experience one of the big changes that will happen in Jack's show. Probably the biggest change during the war years. Tonight's show, he will be on site at March Field entertaining the troops. And Jack will do this on and off throughout the rest of World War II, and even into a year or two after that, he'll still be doing that, entertaining troops at different bases. He usually sticks to around California, is where most of the bases are that he entertains at least for the show. But he'll entertain troops all over the world throughout World War II, just like Bob Hope does. I believe, next to Bob Hope, Jack Benny entertained more troops than anyone else in history. And Hope and Jack Benny are both far and away above what anyone else is at. It's like if you were to plot it on a graph, Bob Hope and Jack Benny break the curve for entertaining troops, and everyone else is way back from there. So I hope you enjoy tonight's episode. It gives you a real feel for what these episodes are going to be like, where Jack's entertaining the troops. I think it's kind of hard for him to serve two masters sometimes between three really. He's always served the audience in the studio and the audience at home. Now he's doing the audience in the studio, but which is basically a base, troop base. But he's also playing to that audience in a different way. He's playing to the troops there. So he's got to be funny for the audience, but he's also got to be funny for the troops. And then he's trying to carry that over to be funny for the people at home. So, pretty tricky tightrope he's walking there, but does a pretty good job of it. The warrior episodes aren't necessarily considered the absolute favorites by most people, but I think they're really interesting, in that they present a whole different way of functioning for Jack, and, it's going to be interesting to see what happens throughout the war years as we go on. So, anyway, enjoy this first on location episode at March Field.
J-E-L-L-O.
The Jell-O program, coming to you from March Field, California, and brought to you by Jell-O and Jell-O Pudding, starring Jack Benny, with Mary Livingston, Phil Harris, Dennis Day, Rochester, and yours truly, Don Wilson. The orchestra opens the program with Wings of America, written by Lieutenant Jesse Hicks of the March Field Post. was Wings of America, played by the orchestra. And now, ladies and gentlemen, inasmuch as our program today is coming to you from Marchfield, California, it is with great pleasure that I bring you that eminent authority on aviation, Flying Jack Benny.
Thank you, thank you. Hello again, this is Jack Benny talking. Flap, flap. I'm flying, boys. And Don, that was really a lovely introduction. I mean, calling me an eminent authority on aviation. How'd you ever find out about that, Don?
Why, don't you remember, Jack? Just before the broadcast, you told me to introduce you that way.
Oh, yes. But that's the truth, Don. It isn't commonly known, but years ago, I was the first person to ever think of the airplane. Only it so happens that a couple of other fellas perfected it before I did. The Smith brothers, Orville and Wilbur. They beat me to it.
Pardon me, Jack, but you must mean the Wright brothers.
The who? Oh, yes, the Wright brothers. The Smith brothers perfected the cough drop before I did. Everybody has the jump on me, you know.
Well, that's very interesting. But tell me, Jack, whatever gave you the idea of a foreign flying machine?
For the airplane? Well, I was sitting on a fence one day when a flock of pigeons flew over my head and a thought struck me. Anyway, I said, if those things can fly, so can Benny. So I made a pair of big canvas wings, tied them onto my bicycle, and rode right off the roof of my father's barn.
And what happened?
I lit on my head, and I've been a comedian ever since. For a few years, I was quite silly, and then I became sophisticated. But that's what an inventor has to go through. Oh, hello, Mary.
Hello, Jack. Hi, you fellas.
Well, that's some hand you got there, Mary. The boys here seem to know you.
Why not? I met most of them at the plantation last night.
Oh, at the plantation. Mm. Oh, yes, that's that nightclub over at Riverside. How'd you happen to be there?
I had a date with the cutest soldier. And you know, Jack, he was the most bashful fella I ever met.
What do you mean, bashful?
He said as soon as there was a blackout, he was going to kiss me.
Well, Mary, as I look out over this sea of faces, I would say that you got the only non-wolf in the outfit. No. No kidding.
You mean I can do better tonight?
Definitely. And speaking of the plantation, Mary, I think I'll go down there some night and play my violin for the boys.
That'll empty the place faster than an all-out alert.
I don't know about that.
Hey, Mary, you should have been here earlier. Jack was telling me how he almost invented the airplane years ago.
Oh, he's full of baloney.
I am, eh? Well, then let me ask you something, sister. Why is it that when I was a kid in Waukegan, everybody called me Flying Jack?
Flying Jack?
Yes.
That's because you used to shoe flies for a blacksmith.
I did nothing of the kind.
I wish I had a nickel for every horse that kicked you in the face.
Oh, yeah? Well, you'd have about 35 cents, Smarty. That's all. And incidentally, those kicks didn't hurt my career as a comedian either. You know, it's amazing how close I... Well, look who's here, if it isn't Piano Teeth.
Hiya, Jackson! Well, here I am, fellas. Make Harris happy.
Say, Phil, why is it every time we broadcast from a new place, you always make your entrance by asking for applause? Why don't you let the audience decide whether they want to give you a hand or not?
I tried that once, Jackson, and there was a lull that was a Lulu.
Oh.
Anyway, look, Jackson, I didn't ask for applause. I just said make Harris happy. They could have thrown money at me or anything. I don't care. And another thing, what's the idea of calling me Piano Teeth? Are you jealous because my ivories are real?
Let me tell you something, Phil. Your teeth may be the McCoy,
but that smile of yours must work from a button somewhere. I mean, that can't be on the level.
A button? You mean what I lead the band with?
That's a baton. You're a fine musician.
Say, Jack, can I read my poem now?
Well, sure, I don't... What poem?
The one I wrote about Marchfield.
Mary, we can do without those Livingston epics tonight. Give these boys a break.
Oh, let her read it, Jack. Mary's poems are always so clever.
She can't do it now, Don. Phil's orchestra has to play a number. Although I wish we had a better choice. I really do.
Now, wait a minute, Jackson. Are you trying to be facetious?
What? I beg your pardon?
I said, are you trying to be facetious? What's the matter? Didn't I pronounce it right?
I don't know what to say now. I don't know. Phil, I can't understand. Where did you ever get a hold of a word like facetious?
Well, I got one of them Webster's Under the Bridge dictionary.
Under the Bridge? Phil, nobody could make that mistake but you and my writer. That word is unabridged. Anyway, Phil, let's have your band number. This is war, and we can take it. So go ahead.
Oh, all right, Jackson. But look, I meant to tell you, the boys got here so late that we didn't have a chance to rehearse.
Oh.
You think it'll make any difference?
Are you kidding? Go ahead, Phil. Hold it. Come in.
Mr. Benny?
Yes?
On behalf of the officers and men of Marchfield, I'd like to present you with this lovely 100-pound bomb.
A bomb? Well, thanks, but gee whiz, isn't it liable to go off?
Yes. I'll see you around.
Get a load of his head, fellas. What a runway it would make. Play, Phil. Played by Phil Harris and his... Hey, Phil, you can tell your bass fiddle player to stop. The number's over.
Oh, yeah. Stop beating it out, Fletcher. I knew we should have rehearsed.
Thanks, Phil. That was Tonight We Love, played by Phil Harris.
I got a good mind to fire that guy.
What for? He made a little mistake, that's all. He probably started late, so he finished late. Say.
Well, he ain't gonna get paid overtime.
All right, forget it. That was Tonight We Love, played by Phil Harris.
That burnt me up, and it's a blot on my record as a great conductor.
Phil, forget it, will you?
Forget it? Would Leopold forget it? Would Stokowski forget it?
That's Leopold Stokowski. He's one man. My goodness.
Well, holy smoke, how can one man lead such a big orchestra?
He works on a bicycle and shut up.
That was Tonight We Love, played by Phil Harris. Oh, the heck with it.
Say, Jack, can I read my poem now?
Mary, never mind the poem. Doris and Edie are listening in. Tear it up, will you?
You let me read it, or I'll tell all these boys that you still owe $8 on your toupee.
Now, just a minute, young lady. In the first place, I don't wear a toupee. In the second place, it's paid for.
Then take the tag off.
That's not a price tag. That little ticket says this side up. I can go along with a gag. Sister.
And I can go along with a gag, too. My dear ladies, why don't you tell your husband to put on his toupee and go down to your neighborhood grocer for a package of Jell-O? It is not only easy to make, but economical as well. So you will find that it is not hard to pay for.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
And remember, folks, Jell-O has that new locked-in flavor. The flavor doesn't go away.
I know. You put it in, and it's there to pay. I know. Don, you're a whiz. I give you an inch, you make a commercial out of it.
Hello, Mr. Benny. Sorry I'm late.
Oh, hello, Dennis. Take a bow. Okay. Well, where have you been, kid? What delayed you?
Oh, I've been having lots of fun. You know, Mr. Benny, I walked all around the field.
You did?
Yeah, I was in the hangars and up in the buildings and inside the planes and all over the place.
Well.
You think I'll ever get my camera back?
I doubt it. Don't you know, Dennis, you're not supposed to take pictures at any military encampment.
Who was taking pictures? The camera wasn't loaded.
Well, then what's the idea of carrying an empty camera around?
My lunch was in it.
Oh.
The United States government owes me one hard-boiled egg and two ham sandwiches.
All right. I'll take it up with the colonel. I'm having lunch with him tomorrow.
A lot of good that'll do me. I'm going to be shot at sunrise.
You're not going to be shot at all. I never saw anyone with such an imagination.
Don't pay any attention to him, kid. He's just being facetious.
Bill. Will you forget about that word? Say, Dennis. Dennis, when you go to get... Dennis. When you go to get shot in the morning, take Phil with you. Please.
I'd love to, but I don't know if I can bring a friend.
Well, try. That's all I ask. And now, ladies and gentlemen...
I salute you, old Marchfield, and I really think you're swell.
Mary, I warned you.
Well, I want to read my poem.
Then start it right. What's the title of it?
The title?
Yes.
Not January Field, not February Field, but March Field.
The trouble with that title, Mary, is it tips off the fact that the poem is going to be putrid. But go ahead with it. I'm going out for a glass of water.
Come back here, you coward.
Okay, let's get it over with. Go ahead, Mary.
I salute you, old March Field, and I really think you're swell. If the Japs, they get too close, you will blast them all to pieces.
Nice rhyming.
You want me to rhyme it?
No. Continue.
I think the boys here are so cute. Private Major Colonel Luce. I love to dance with all the soldiers. They don't keep time, but how they hold yous.
Well, of course, I wouldn't know. Proceed.
Here you are near the town of Censored, in the state of I Ain't Talking. And your hangar's full of, don't ask me, because I'm not squawking.
Well, what's that for? Why all the mystery?
Military secrets, Daddy. Wake up.
Oh, yes. Continue.
Your boys get leave to go to town to have some fun and clown around. They jump in their cars and fill up with gas. But what can you do on a 6-hour pass?
Very good. You ought to stop, Mary, after that big laugh. How about doing your song now, Dennis?
Okay.
Oh, wait a minute. I'm not through yet.
Oh.
Last verse coming up.
Go ahead.
Before I close this lovely poem, I have a word for those at home. Now get this, folks, and keep on trying, because the bond you're buying will keep them flying. The end.
Oh, that's very good.
Say, that was all right, Mary. You had a nice finish. That poem turned out better than I thought it would. Well, okay, Dennis, what's your song going to be?
I'm going to sing We Did It Before and We Can Do It Again, assisted by the Marchfield Sextet.
The Marchfield Sextet? Dennis, there are 8 soldiers in back of you.
2 of them are guarding me till I get shot.
Oh. Well, I guess a guy that carries a hard-boiled egg and a camera has it coming to him. Go ahead, sink in. Wait a minute. Come in.
Mr. Benny?
Yes?
On behalf of St. Peter, I want to welcome you to the Pearly Gate.
Pearly Gate?
Didn't that bomb go off yet?
Get out of here! I wish that character would stop following me all over the country.
December 7th, 1941, our land of freedom was defined. December 8th, 1941, Uncle Sam replied. We did it before and we can do it again, and we will do it again. We've got a heck of a job to do, but you can bet that we'll see it through. We did it before and we can do it again, and we will do it again. We're one for all and we're all for one. They'll get a licking before we're done. Millions of voices are ringing, singing as we march along. We did it before and we can do it again, and we will do it again. We'll knock them over and then we'll get the guy in back of them. We did it before, we'll do it again.
We did it before and we can do it again, and we will do it again. We know we're right and we also know that gangsterism has got to go. We did it before and we can do it again, and we will do it again.
We're one for all and we're all for one. They'll get a licking before we're done. We're going to show them in Tokyo we Yanks are out to win. We did it before, we'll do it again.
That was We Did It Before from Eddie Cantor's Broadway show Banjo Eye, sung by Dennis Day and the Marchfield Octet. And very good, fellas. Say, Dennis, where did you meet these 8 soldiers?
Well, I've got a girl in Riverside, and last night I took her to the plantation.
So?
What happened to my girl, fellas?
Well, that's rich. So these boys took your girl away. Hey, Dennis, is she pretty?
No, she's a mess.
Every girl you go out with is a mess. Why don't you go out with a pretty girl once in a while?
Well, if I can't hang on to a cluck, what chance have I got with a good-looking gal?
Well, that makes sense, I guess. But personally, I can't keep company with a girl unless she's really gorgeous.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I have yet to see you out with a dame that didn't sag somewhere.
Is that so? I've been out with some pretty hot-looking babies, haven't I, Phil?
Lay off, Jackson. I'm a married man.
Well, for Pete's sake, you can talk about pretty girls, can't you?
Nope, no talking and no looking.
No looking? Not even on a windy day?
On windy days, I'm not allowed out of the house.
Well, that may be okay with you, but I'd like to see the woman that could dominate me. And now, ladies and gentlemen, Mary, stop looking at me that way. And now, ladies and gentlemen, we have a surprise for you. As our guest tonight, we have one of the boys stationed here at March Field, the biggest soldier in the United States Army, a fellow who makes Don Wilson look like a midget, Staff Sergeant August Stackwell. Step right up, Sergeant. Wow, what a physique. You ought to see him, folks. He looks like Boulder Dam in a khaki uniform. Tell me, Sergeant, how much do you weigh?
407 pounds, not counting lunch.
Oh, 407 pounds. Well, Sarge, I want you to meet a fellow we used to think was pretty hefty until you came along. Don Wilson, our announcer.
How do you do, Sergeant?
Hi, Skinny.
You didn't know you were going to get those kind of laughs, did you? Now, look, if you don't mind, Sarge, I'd like to ask you a few questions. To begin with...
If a little woman hadn't put me on a diet, I'd make this guy look like a toothpaste.
Don, please, don't be so jealous. Now, Sergeant, I'm sure our listeners would like to know something about your history. To begin with...
If I hadn't cut out potatoes, I could look like Boulder Dam, too.
Don, stop mumbling. Now, Sergeant Stackwell, you say you weigh 407, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
I see. And how much did you weigh when you were born?
150 pounds.
That's 15 pounds, Sergeant. 15 pounds. Now, he looks like Wilson and he reads like Phil Harris. Now, of course, Sergeant, being so large must present certain problems. For instance, you don't sleep on a regular army cot, do you?
No, I use the king size.
Good. That's all right. Now, Sergeant...
I'll bump stomachs with him any day.
Wilson, calm down. My goodness. Well, Sergeant, I want to thank you for coming up here and saying hello.
Thank you, Mr. Benny. No hard feelings, Don.
No, not at all.
That's how I feel about it. So long, Slack.
That Stackwell is an awfully nice fella. And, Don, I don't know what's the matter with you today. Andy Devine is much fatter than you are, and you've never been jealous of him.
Oh, he wears pads under his clothes. Get wise, will you?
Andy Devine wears pads? I can't believe it.
Say, Jackson, did you hear Andy on Fred Allen's program last Wednesday? The guy was terrific.
No, I missed Allen's program last week, and I'm just sick about it. Of course, I'm not as sick as if I'd listened in. How was the show?
It was darn good, and Andy sure spilled the beans about you.
What do you mean?
Well, Andy said you never let the actors get together in your program because you're afraid they'll organize and strike for back salary.
That's the silliest remark I ever heard. What did Allen say?
He seemed to think it was quite facetious.
Facetious, I know, facetious. Shut up. And before we go any further, I'd like to clear this thing right now. If there's anybody in this cast that I owe back salary to, I wish he'd raise his hand. Come on. There, you see? Nobody raised their hand.
I got mine up, Mr. Benny.
Okay, Dennis, but come right back. I'm tired of these rumors that Allen started about me.
But, Mr. Benny...
Never mind. Put your arm down or I'll yank it down. Now, let me tell you something about Allen. I remember once in Toledo... I'll take it. Hello?
Hello, Mr. Benny. This is Rochester.
Oh, hello, Rochester. What do you want?
I got bad news for you, boss. You'll have to take the Greyhound back to town.
Why?
Well, here's what happened. I filled up the gas tank this morning and started out from Beverly Hills like you told me to.
Am I Maxwell? Huh?
It was a beautiful day. The sun peeping over the snow-capped mountains gave one the feeling that all was serene.
Rochester, forget the mountains. What happened to my car?
Well, I was driving through Ontario when a big truck ahead of me full of oranges suddenly stopped.
And what happened?
Marmalade!
Rochester, I see no excuse for you smashing into a truck. What do you think the emergency brake is for?
It ain't for stopping. We found that out.
Well, tell me about the car. Is it damaged much?
No, it worked out fine. The fenders are straight now.
Well, good.
But the right front tire's gone boom for the last time.
Oh, well, I guess there's nothing else to do but go out and buy a new tire.
I beg your pardon?
I said go out and buy a new tire.
A new tire?
Yes.
Just a second, I'll put Superman on the phone.
Oh, that's right. It is pretty hard to get tires now. I'll tell you what. Use the spare.
We ain't got no spare.
What do you mean?
I cut it up last week when you needed rubber heels for your brown shoes.
Oh, yes, darn it. Well, look, Rochester, I'll ride back to town with Mr. Harris and the boys in their bus. Meanwhile, you stay with the Maxwell.
You mean for the duration?
You can have that tire fixed. Now hang up. This is long distance.
Okay. Oh, say, boss, looks like you owe me $10 on that bet we made.
Yes, yes, I know Buddy Bear lost. But I can't understand how Lewis knocked him out in the very first round.
Well, you see, Joe's in the Army now, and he had to get back to camp before tap.
Oh, well, that explains it. So long, Rochester.
Goodbye.
Gee, I've got to get a tire. I wonder how that rubber tree in my greenhouse is coming along. Play, Phil.
Tomorrow night for dessert, surprise the family with a grand dessert, Jack Benny's Jellied Fruit Medley and one of Jack's own special favorites. It's a delightful dessert, a real treat to the taste, and yet so quick and easy to make. Simply dissolve one package of Jell-O imitation strawberry flavor in one pint of hot fruit juice and water. Next, chill until slightly thickened and fold in one can of fruit salad cut into small pieces. Chill until firm, and then serve with a garnishing of spicy mint leaves and bright red cherries. What a beautiful looking dessert it is. A rich, colorful combination of delicious canned fruit salad and rosy pink strawberry Jell-O. Many grocers are featuring these items, both of them, all next week. So get them both tomorrow. And remember, desserts made with Jell-O taste really swell. Because Jell-O's locked-in process protects the flavor for your enjoyment.
We're a little late, so good night, folks.
This broadcast was presented for the entertainment of the personnel of Marchfield and does not constitute a commercial product endorsement by the War Department.